Hello everyone and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management Weekly News Roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I am Rod Jones, Content Manager at the Institute, and in this podcast we will be looking at news from the week up to the 28th of October 2019. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello Kate.
Hello Rod.
Our first story, Kate, asks, should leaders reverse out-of-hours email bans? According to research from the University of Sussex, out-of-hours email bans could be doing workers more harm than good, with the measures reportedly inducing stress rather than easing it. Led by Dr. Emma Russell, the study concluded that while blanket bans could help some workers achieve certain goals, they could be particularly difficult for staff with high levels of anxiety and neuroticism. As such, Dr. Russell recommends organisations should personalise their work email action recommendations according to the different goals that different people value. Kate, what should leaders take from this research and what does it mean for flexible working?
Well, immediately, it's not very flexible. So the idea of flexing work to suit your own commitments, to manage your work-life balance and therefore contribute to well-being is immediately eroded if you're not allowed to answer or read indeed emails at certain times. And it's a very paternalistic, I suppose, the benevolent approach to well-being at work. But if it causes you more stress not to answer your emails, or you're managing your day so that you're allowing between, say, 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. to do some uninterrupted work, this is far worse. And as Dr. Russell has highlighted, if you are prone to anxiety and neuroticism, this is going to make you less productive, and therefore it doesn't really work terribly well.
Thank you, Kate. Appropriately for Halloween, our next story asks, how should leaders lay ghosting to rest? Now, ghosting really has nothing to do with Halloween, but it's the growing practice of abruptly withdrawing contact from a specific individual or organisation with no notice or subsequent explanation. Alan Price, Operations Director at HA support firm Peninsula, said, in 2018, we actually saw a 21% increase in calls to our advice line from employers regarding prospective employees ghosting. Ghosting can be highly inconvenient for employers and they should take steps to prevent it where possible. On the other side, expat Alyssa Lindo said, after a productive interview with the CEO, he shook my hand and smiled broadly, saying, you're going to be a great fit here. I look forward to working with you. I waited 2 days and sent a follow-up thank you email, but got no response. After 3 weeks, I discovered they'd hired someone else. Kate, what is going on here to cause this devaluing of relationships, and what should leaders do to put it right?
The bottom line is it's really bad manners to not respond to somebody, and I think we read so many anecdotal accounts of people looking for jobs and sending off many applications and not even receiving an acknowledgement. So I think the HR recruiters have to take responsibility for that. If they are not treating people with respect, if they are not letting people know in good time that they haven't been successful, then how can they expect the same people in the same market to treat them differently? So there's a sort of double standard here. And what we need to remember is when somebody abruptly leaves an organisation, which is another part of the problem, that it has such a adverse impact on the people who are left behind. And companies that don't respond politely to applicants when they apply for jobs, who suddenly withdraw contracts from people, gives you an insight into the culture, and that can't be a very comfortable place to work.
Thank you very much, Kate. Our next story looks at a report published by Chargiffe that suggests the concept of sociability and collaboration has dominated workplace design to date, but little thought has been given to the needs and expectations of employees across generations or those who are looking for spaces or quiet zones to concentrate and think. This new study claims that 54% of workers say the ability to concentrate on certain tasks is the most enjoyable aspect of a workplace culture and design that provides different places to work in, whilst 48% stated that seeking a quiet place to think was the most enjoyable aspect. When asked about the benefits of mobility around the office and the benefits of different workspaces, less than a third of respondents claimed that wanting to spend time and interact with colleagues was a priority, with the youngest age group, 18 to 24 year olds, most liking the idea of moving around the office during the day. Kate, how can leaders ensure that workspaces cater for collaboration whilst also providing quiet places to think?
This is another example of how a blanket decision, such as we're going to have open plan workspaces and people will collaborate and communicate and cooperate and it'll all be marvellous, actually doesn't suit all of the people all of the time. And especially people who work from home and only come into the office from time to time, so associate with home being productive and where you get things done, and that the office is a space for chat and communication, that what we've done, I think, is made the office a less productive place to be. So zones where you can collaborate in one space and have a quieter space where people can concentrate would seem to be a solution, but it's almost taken us back to those days of quiet please in the library. I think it's a big challenge for architects and office designers to look at all the things that happen at work and not just buy in to the dominant ideology, which obviously collaboration, cooperation, hot desking was all in vogue, and now we're living with the unintended consequences of that.
Indeed we are, Kate. Our final story is a Dow Jones News Journal report on how Microsoft tapped the autism community for talent. The story has its origins in 2015 when Microsoft decided to launch an autism hiring program that included adapting its hiring process to the specific needs of people with the condition. The changes include allowing candidates with autism to apply via a special email and skip the initial phone screening, giving candidates a chance to do a practice interview and get feedback from recruiters before doing the official one, allowing candidates to code using their own laptops instead of doing it on a whiteboard in front of recruiters and other candidates, which people with autism have said makes them feel very nervous. Since the launch of the autism hiring program, Neil Barnett, Director of Inclusive Hiring, says some of the procedures have been adapted by hiring managers in other parts of the company and also outside Microsoft. Microsoft has hired over 100 employees with autism across different teams throughout its program, and Joey Chemis, an employee who has autism spectrum disorder, says once people with autism are given the opportunity to shine in an interview process that is tailored to their needs and hired, they aren't treated differently from other employees. Kate, what can leaders learn from this Microsoft initiative?
We can really learn that inclusivity and diversity is about so much more than gender, ethnicity, sexual orientation, disability. It's about how people flourish in the working environment. And as we've seen with the out-of-hours emails, it doesn't suit people all the time. And we should all offer prospective candidates the opportunity to flourish at interview. And using a one-size-fits-all, which is invariably come and give a presentation, sit down and meet people, we are immediately disadvantaging a huge number of the job applicants. And this focus on what do autistic people need to enable them to flourish, obviously great for one community, but also makes us think so much more about everybody else and how they should do best. We want the best people. Let us help them show us their best at interview.
Thank you very much, Kate. And before we conclude, do you have any news from the Institute this week, Kate?
Well, just to encourage people to look on the International Leadership website page, register for the many webinars, conversations, discussions we've got going.
Thank you, Kate. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thanks, Rod.